You may have heard about geoengineering after the Copenhagen climate talks late last year. These are large-scale projects aimed at altering the Earth's climate as temperatures continue to rise. One idea involves injecting excess carbon dioxide into rocks under the ocean, some of which can be found right off the coast of New York City. The proposal is detailed in a new study published in Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, and we are joined now by Columbia University geophysicist Dave Goldberg, the lead author of that study. I'm pleased it brings him to our show today for our first underreported segment. Hello.
Nice to be here.
Haven't countries like Norway experimented with this technology already?
Indeed. Norway has been doing undersea injection of carbon dioxide for 13, 14 years now.
How successful have they been?
They've been quite successful. It's about a million tons of CO2 a year that they're injecting offshore, and it's monitored and seems to be staying in place.
Can you explain how this CO2 injection works?
The Norway example is fairly straightforward in that it takes CO2 right out of a gas production facility and re-injects it. So it's the reverse of the extraction of gas in offshore platform, and it goes back into a different layer at the site.
So this is the opposite of hydrofracking that we've been hearing so much about?
Well, hydraulic fracturing is a different process that may or may not be used in producing gas. Taking the carbon dioxide off of the produced methane that they're doing there and re-injecting it is the idea of sequestration.
Doesn't it become liquefied? How does it become liquefied?
It has to be pressurized and re-injected as a liquid. And it needs to be deep enough then back into a layer of rock where it'll stay in liquid form for long enough to be secure.
How much new infrastructure would have to be put in place for this idea to work?
At the scale of really making an impact on climate change, this is basically a project that would involve this infrastructure the size of the oil and gas industry now.
Because we'd have to create pipelines and injection platforms and the like.
There would be injection platforms. It would be pipelines. Now, the easy solution is to use those pipelines and platforms first. But if we found other locations where we could find a good injection site, we would have to create that.
But my problem always with these kinds of proposals is it sounds to me like you'd need a lot of energy to pump the CO2 under the ocean, and that might be counterproductive.
Well, it would take some energy to liquefy, to pressurize the CO2, and the largest cost in energy terms is actually the capture side, getting CO2 captured at the power plant and then piping it and injecting it. The piping and injecting piece of the puzzle is not the most expensive nor the most energy-intensive part.
Have the Norwegians found it cost-effective?
They have, in the sense that they have a tax on carbon, mm-hmm. and that's part of the incentive for them.
And they also must have a lot of basalt along their seacoast.
They are using sediments, which is a totally viable situation for them in the North Sea. Basalt has other advantages, and particularly offshore ones, that we were studying in the East Coast as well as in the West Coast in a previous study.
Linda, New Jersey has been wrestling with a proposal by SCS Energy of Massachusetts to build a coal-fired power plant there that would use this capture injection method for 90% of its emissions. How easy is it to capture CO2 coming out of power plants?
That proposal for a new plant would be a design effort to start from scratch. It's harder to retrofit plants than to build new plants and capture them. They have to be built with scrubbers and compressors and so on.
Because there are other chemicals that would be coming out along with the CO2.
There are others. There would be a way of reducing the split between, say, sulfur emissions and carbon dioxide emissions. You would want to take this carbon dioxide, separate it, and inject it into a formation offshore, which is what they proposed. And they are also looking, like the Norway example, they're looking at a sediment formation to inject into.
The New York Times reported last April that capturing CO2 at power plants would add an estimated 25% to operating expenses and would increase construction costs. So could that make this sort of thing cost prohibitive?
This is not going to be an inexpensive operation. What it is going to require is some scheme to put a price on carbon, and that price would then include the ability to retrofit or build new plants that can capture it.
Well, I don't know how many of the plants that are where you could capture carbon are near the ocean, but wouldn't it be best to have them nearby?
The idea here is that we're looking at where the energy is needed, and indeed populations are coastal centered. The ocean also offers a nice advantage in that it is away from the centers themselves and away from private properties.
Well, there's the NIMBY situation, isn't there?
It would. There certainly
don't want this not in your backyard.
There certainly would be that the regulatory issue as well as the property issue. The property issue would be reduced to some extent on an offshore environment. Basalt offshore has its own advantages, and that those are indeed that it has a formation that is nice and open, well fractured, very porous, 10-15% pore volume in the rock, and we're looking for a large volume of space to inject CO2.
Is basalt the best possible rock formation for this to work?
I think there are some advantages to using basalt that are clear on a chemistry side, in that it uses with CO2 and water and basalt mixed, the calcium and magnesium in the basalt can be converted chemically to a essentially benign, inert solid, basically limestone, and then stay there permanently.
And isn't the Palisades on the New Jersey side of the Hudson pretty much a basalt formation?
It is. It indeed is a same basalt, and it's one of the basalts that formed in the more or less the same period that the basalts we studied are, about 200 million years ago. That basalt is not a basalt lava flow. It's called a sill, which never made it to the surface of the lands at the time.
Mm-hmm.
The nice thing about the ones that flow to the surface is that they're very porous at their tops. So these flow tops, as we call them, are fractured and open, and we'd be able to very, very much be injectable.
Now, how much CO2 are we theoretically talking about here? Because this sounds like a complicated procedure with a limited potential. I'm glad to do anything I can to cut down on the potential of climate change, but will this really have much of an impact?
It needs to be a fairly large-scale project in the end if we're going to have a large impact on climate. The volumes involved are large. If you were to take, for example, the production of CO2 that the U.S. puts out annually and liquefy it, and we're able to keep it on the surface in a pressurized form and just want to put it in a container at the surface, say a big one like Giant Stadium, it would take you 3,000 fills or more every year just to deal with that volume of CO2. So that's a big story. You know, we need to put that somewhere if we're going to make a dent.
Well, we're having a hard time figuring out what to do with our nuclear waste. Tell our audience who I'm talking to, Dave Goldberg, senior scientist at the Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory at Columbia University. We are talking about the CO2 sequestration in New York Harbor as our first underreported segment. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Rachel in New Jersey left a comment on our show page. She says, does this really sound like a safe idea? In 1986 in Cameroon, a cloud of CO2 was released from Lake Neos and suffocated 1,700 people, storing a large amount of carbon dioxide in such a densely populated area. Seems like a bad idea. With this largely untested technology, how can we trust that we won't be in danger of asphyxiation if the carbon dioxide were to leak?
Mm. Leakage is certainly a concern, but the Lake Neos example is a volcanic situation where a lot of CO2 is concentrated in a lake and inverted the lake in a major episode. The underground injection of CO2 will be stored, and the idea is that it's very well sealed, and certainly that would be confirmed ahead of time.
So it couldn't leach out and then rise to the surface?
Well, it leach out if there's a in-process leak is maybe possible, and I think the result would be quite benign into the ocean. It's the catastrophic event that you certainly don't want to get anywhere near, and it would be tested and fully sealed, picked sites that are fully sealed and well well contained.
So how much CO2 could the rock wind up holding, and how long could we be continue doing this? Because we produce a lot of CO2.
We do. Like I said, there's volumes and volumes of CO2. The areas that we've estimated, and they are rough estimates given that our evidence is mostly from on land and we're making the inference to offshore sites, those volumes of rock are significant. We'd have we estimated about close to a billion tons of CO2 in one example. Again, that's only a fraction of what we'd want to cover. Now, you'd fill that rock at some point, and it would stay there filled with CO2, and then you would want to move to another location.
What happens to the rock, the basalt, when you put all this carbon dioxide into it? Does it remain basalt, or does it become something else?
It stays as basalt. It stays as a the rock that you'd inject into is fractured and broken, and you would convert with the chemistry I mentioned before, the CO2 plus water plus those minerals in the basalt to limestone. So you're going to get a mix of limestone and basalt.
So now, we'd be creating limestone here.
You'd be creating limestone, filling the space within the basalt.
And would that remain under the water?
It would remain intact and in place forever. I don't see that once that conversion happens, if it bears out to its full extent of the process, wouldn't change at all. And in fact, that's the natural process of the change of basalt with water and seawater, CO2-laden water going through it over time anyway.
Because water is made up of carbon dioxide and oxygen.
And there's a lot of this going on basically naturally around the globe.
Would the EPA classification of CO2 as a health hazard make building a CO2 pipeline difficult?
I certainly think that there are CO2 pipelines. I know there are CO2 pipelines on thousands of miles of them around the country. So moving a new pipeline into a new location is certainly going to be a regulatory issue, but I don't think it could be unresolved.
Obviously, you like this idea.
I think it's one of the better options, and we're probably going to need most of the options we've got on the table to deal with the problem.
Dave Goldberg is a senior scientist at the Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory at Columbia University and the lead author of a study that was just recently published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences about the potential of injecting carbon dioxide into basalt in our area. And I want to thank you so much for being on Underreported with us today.
My pleasure.